Welcome you to this workshop. It's great to be with you. And I felt this morning when we were interviewed and trying to share a little about Europe, that was a good opportunity for us. And we really hope that we will get more chances to talk with you. And sometimes I feel a little overwhelmed when coming here, as I shared this morning. It's being embraced in the way that we are being here always means a lot to us. And we have some of you here, our dear friends, Kate and Griff Pickard and a few others we know, and the rest of you, of course, are people we haven't met or met little. So Kari and I, what we will do is that we will share this time. I will begin and end it. Kari will have a middle portion. And what we have done is to put our thoughts on a piece of paper, and you will have it all. And I think, John, you could just give it out to each one. That's always the issue, should we give it first or after? But we have some questions in there. So we will some of those questions we will work on during the workshop. And we also want it to be interactive. That means that we will have some time for you to share things and from your experiences. What about you, Kylie? If you could pray for this time together?
I will. Lord, I thank you for this opportunity to be together. Yes. It's good to know that you are here among us. Your grace is new every morning. Mm-hmm. Lord, I ask that you will speak to our hearts as we talk about the heart of an alongsider, that you will encourage us. And let us see what can be of help in our lives. Thank you for your presence. Amen.
Thank you. Well, let's just look briefly at this paper so we know what we are about. Then there is no hidden things in it. I would just like to start out with a couple of definitions. Then I have three examples from everyday life experiences of people trying to live out the gospel. Then we would like to have some time to reflect and share, and that in that first box. We come back on that, and you will have some time on your own on that. Then we will look at an example of Jesus, and then we will move on to what we think are three key attitudes, heart attitudes of an alongsider. A heart for God, a heart for the lost, the heart of a friend. So those are some of the things we want to share. Then we'll have some time of sharing interaction here among us. And then we would like to end this up with some time to reflect on our own again and to try to summarize a little. Is that okay? Fine. You know, we have different words always swimming around in the air. An insider and an alongsider, maybe they are not the words that are mostly used. But NavPress came out with a book called An Insider. And I think we want to have a very, very, very simple definition of that. It's just our natural context of people. They are the friends, the colleagues, the family, those who are living next to us all the time. They are the ones who are, as 2 Corinthians say, they are the ones who are able to read the letters that the Spirit has written in our hearts. Those are the people we can influence. And then again, it's so easy for us, and I think you understand that better from this morning. We know that your environment may be, at least in some places, a little more welcoming of people wanting and trying to share the gospel than some of us in Europe sense these days. So I don't want in any way to complicate this or make this difficult, but I think I just want to encourage each one of us to see that we are special people, each one of us, because no other people have those colleagues, those neighbors, those family members that we have. In that way, we are unique. We are the only ones there. And I mean, just that thought is very uplifting and encouraging in itself. And then an alongsider. We will see from Luke 24, it says that Jesus came along. I mean, those two people in Luke 24. He came along, started to talk with them and interact with them. So an alongsider is just someone walking purposefully alongside to encourage and to equip insiders to reach people for Christ. An alongsider is an encourager. It's a friend. It's someone who cares. It's someone who wants to encourage and equip me to live there among my non-Christian friends. I think it's 1.5 years ago now, a friend of mine called Ole, he called me, and he was kind of almost sobbing in his voice, and I heard traffic in the background, so I understood that he was in the midst of a city. And he said, I lost my job. And this is the second time I lose my job this very year. 3 children, well-educated, but one of those losing their job because things are a little down in Norway and Europe. So he said, and I don't know how to explain this to my non-Christian friends either, because I tend to have a feeling of just being a loser. Lost the job again. What do I say? It somehow takes away my boldness, the courage to be in there. And then I asked him, why do you call me? And he said, well, basically, you are the one with whom I can talk about those kind of things. And in that respect, I think I am an alongsider for him. I'm someone he feels natural to call to, and we meet every now and then. And that's the whole purpose of it. Someone to talk with, someone to share burdens, joys, and on. Then, of course, we often meet people, and I know you do also, those who have draining fears about their family situation. They may have a teenager who have arrived into a bad company of friends. The parents have a hard time sleeping during nights because they are just scared. Fear, they worry. Back to this morning even. I mean, what an enormous need it is to have someone to talk with, to share with, maybe to cry with, to be encouraged by, someone to read the Bible with, and in that way be helped to keep hanging in there and don't draw back as an insider in the environment where they are living. I have a close friend called Halvar. He came out of our business school ministry some years ago. He is a consultant out in business. He does a good job there. But he is in a total hostile, non-welcoming environment when it comes to sharing the faith. I mean, he has no other colleagues who are Christians, and he doesn't really know how to relate to that. But what bothers him even more is that when he is together with his Christian friends, they don't understand him. They have kind of grouped together. They are in a safe environment of a church setting, while he wants to be out there, relate to people. And the Christians, they think he's living kind of with little responsibility, sense of responsibility towards the Christian fellowship. He wants to be out there reaching his friends. And he says that the times we come together just to read the Bible, to talk about, to pray for his non-Christian friends, and just be around his life and his opportunities. He says those are the times he need more than anything else to be able to be there as an insider. And of course, all of you have examples of that, but those are the kind of things all of us face at times. And that can fill us with confusion, with sadness. We can lose confidence and courage in our lives living among our non-Christian friends. But therefore, all of us, in all areas of life, but especially in the area of trying to witness about Christ in our relationships. We need someone. We need an alongsider. And what we would like you to do now is to just take 5 minutes. And you, in that box there, you see, think of people who have encouraged you through different phases of life. And that can be very general to start out with. But think also, especially in the area, who have encouraged you to live as an insider, to influence people around you. And then the second, what was it about these people that made them helpful for you? What was it about them? What made them helpful to you? So the basic question I'm asking is, what are important heart attitudes of an alongsider? What is it? So let's just take 5 minutes of reflection on that. Faces will probably come up and you will see them. It can be your parents, a soccer coach, someone in the church, someone in a family, different people, different stages. Well, I guess some different faces came to you, and no, we just have a time of sharing. What are some things about people that have been helpful to you? Different areas. So please contribute with your experiences.
First thing I wrote down was this: listen to me.
He listened to me.
Genuinely listened to me.
Yeah.
Not distracted, but genuinely listened to me.
Yeah.
Proactively contact me.
Yeah.
That's another thing I wrote.
Yeah. And you can tell the difference. Yeah.
Rather than me contacting them.
Yeah. Thank you. Adjusted their schedules. They made themselves available to you and your needs. Yeah. Great.
Just non-judgmental. You didn't judge.
Are you summing those up, Kari? Yeah, fine. Yeah? Katie? Yeah. Sense of being important to them. Yeah.
See, where everything is mentioned here is fruit.
Mm-hmm.
It's fruit of being a follower of Christ, serious follower of Christ. I find that for the people that are, they're not even, I guess one is a friend, but one is maybe not even a friend, but they're just really serious followers of Christ. I'm not talking about superficial. I mean, they really are trying to become more Christ-like in their life. Very serious about it.
Yeah.
And as a result, the fruit flows. I mean, they're just neat people to...
Yeah. Good to have around. Yeah. Yeah. So many. Yeah, I think it's you.
They actually spoke words of encouragement and affirmation.
Yeah. They did say something. Yeah. So there was an element of the word in there.
Yes.
Yeah.
They shared how they've been comforted by God.
Uh-huh.
They themselves have been comforted.
Yeah.
And it was not something that they just, passed off the top of their head. They shared their own life.
So it was something about 2 Corinthians 1:3-4, where Paul talks about the comfort we have been comforted with by God. That's the kind of comfort we can pass on to others. Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
I found that, like this man said, that they were people who were very focused in the kingdom life. They had God's values, and that was their focus in life. But when they came alongside, then they were equipped to equip me.
Mm-hmm.
They knew what I needed and taught me and equip me in an area that I was needing.
Yeah. So they were equipped, as you say. They were able to help you.
They knew the word or the tools or the principles, whether it be financially or marriage or whatever.
Yeah.
Sharing your faith.
Yeah.
They knew how to do it, and then they could pass it on to me.
So it's something about that idea in Psalm 72, is it? Or 78? About David. I mean, his the sincerity of his heart, but then the skillfulness of his hands. So those two things seem to go together here. It's something about the heart, and it's something about ability and skills.
Sort of like Jesus with grace and truth.
Grace and truth, yeah.
This is a very brief story, but there have been other people in my life, but just about 3 years ago, a man from the church who was an associate pastor here in Colorado Springs. His father was Herbert Lockyer, the famous man from England.
I heard him speak from here many years ago, yeah.
Well, Herbert Lockyer Jr. Mm-hmm. saw me at the car washing place one morning about 3 years ago. And he said, "How are you, Bob?" And I said, I'm not feeling well. I'm depressed. He said, "Well, why don't we have breakfast at the club Saturday morning?" Mm-hmm. And we both live near the same club, Garden of the Gods Club. And he started to ask me why I was downcast, and then related things in his own life about being downcast, so I didn't feel any hesitancy to talk to him. But he, I think he had a characteristic of being interested in me, and he had a love not only for the Word, because he also was well versed in the Bible, but that man, over a period of 3 months, absolutely changed my attitude. And he got me started thinking about my life, and then he said, "Why don't you write a book?" And that's how it all happened.
Oh.
And alongside. And we've been meeting every Saturday morning when we're both in town for breakfast for 3 years now, sharing the Word, sharing our families, and he's 90 years old.
Oh, isn't that great? Isn't that great? And didn't you say something very important? When that relationship started, he shared something from his life that made you not feel like a loser. He could identify with you, and that gave you the courage to share. Yeah, that's good to hear. Yeah, please.
Urged me to be spiritually accountable, and they were positive, looking forward people. So things were, the best is yet to come.
Best is yet to come, yeah. Yeah, there are so many hands here. Yeah, please go on.
I was thinking of the non-verbal, a smile.
Yeah.
And allowing God's grace to work through this person.
Yeah.
Reach me.
Yeah. Good.
It caused me to think of another thing that I should have said. Challenging also. Not just listening and associating, but also challenging you to do something.
Mm-hmm.
As you got challenged
by
your book.
Good. Well, we seem to have it all here. Are there more experiences you would like to share?
Oh, man, I think it's been said, but I wrote down that it took action.
Yeah.
On my behalf, I've heard several examples of the person who said
they
adjusted their schedule.
Yeah. 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 Mm.
As I've listened to all of this, it's interesting that no one has used the term love, and yet all of these things are love.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't love someone without listening.
It's some kind of a proactive love, as John is talking about. We do something about it. It's not only an emotion, but it's something we do something with.
People are sometimes reluctant to share something, but I also found that an encourager is one who can bring something up that is hidden down within and doing it without a sense of superiority to them, but someone who can draw near to somebody who is able to pull something out that is way down underneath and yet not be a threat to them.
Mm. Excellent.
Downing told me one time that for encouragement, he says people have to know how to use their creative juices.
Creative juices.
If we don't use our creative juices, we will not know encouragement.
Yeah.
And that really makes sense. I think that's charitable, what, you know, the creativeness of God, what God's given her.
Yeah. Good. Since I was a little confusing about that verse about David, it's Psalms 78:72. And David shepherded them with integrity of heart, with skillful hands he led them. So it's that about the integrity of heart, good heart, and skillful hands, as you shared. Well, it seems like we could go on this, and we have really gathered some key elements. And I have no ambition or no idea that we could share anything that you haven't already shared. But I think it would be good if you could try to sum up a few things from some of the observations we've made, and then talk more about it after that. And I think when we've shared now, we have obviously shared from all parts of life, all areas of life. We may have struggled in all kinds of situations. And it's a little thing here that we want to be as broad as possible to include all of life, as we have done through what we're saying now. And at the same time, it would be good if we could keep that idea all the time, that we do this also for the purpose of encouraging one another to live out there as the letters, as the salt, as the light, to be there. And those two, of course, they come together in a beautiful way. It's not two different things, because as Jerry said last night, what we do have towards people around us, that's how we live. And then he said something about family life. That's what comes closest to us. So, I mean, those are the things that makes us into these letters and into this aroma that is good about the Christian life. I would just like to briefly take you to Luke 24, because that's a key passage. And I think we see all the things you have already mentioned here in this passage. You know the passage, so we won't take the time to read it, but it is what happens on the road to Emmaus. Do I say it right? Emmaus? You understand it right? I always struggle with that one. But you know, Christ has risen, the power of death has been broken, but the disciples are confused. They don't know what to think about this. There are some rumors going around in the city. They say that some women have amazed us with their testimonies about the risen Christ, but they are down. And we see in verse 15, as they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up to and walked along with them. That's the idea of an alongsider. He just came up on his initiative, as one of you said, on his initiative. He came, walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. And then instead of starting to preach at them, he started to ask questions. He asked them, verse 17, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked, "Are you the only visitor in Jerusalem and do not know the things that have happened there these days?" And then Jesus could have really jumped on them with a good answer. But again, he says, "What things?" And that reminds me of what you said, people drawing me out, helping to get some of the deeper things down there. Not the easy answer, not the fast answer, with the danger of just putting a lid on everything, trying or thinking that we have understood it. But Jesus, he just goes on, "What things?" He helps them to put words to their confusion and their things. And then they say, "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed." And then they go on. And then verse 21, They said, but we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. They were discouraged and disappointed because reality didn't match with the hopes they had. And isn't that often what is most difficult for us? Whether it be in a family situation or in our private lives or relating to people in the professional world or wherever, when it doesn't go the way we had hoped. And if there is any situation where we need someone to come alongside, it is when we live with that discrepancy between our visions, our dreams, our ambitions, whatever it is, and then life turns out to be very differently. Dreams about one of our children, and then something difficult happens. So that was something Jesus helped them to put words to. And it amazes me. You know, Jesus could have given a very short answer to their questions. He was the answer himself. I mean, he was there. He was the answer. But he went this long way with them to talk with them. And then we just jump a little. And then verse 28. As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus acted as if he were going farther. I love that expression. He says, Jesus acted as if he were going farther. His way, his plans took him that way, but then they urged him strongly and said, stay with us, for it is nearly evening. And some of you said, making ourselves available. And that's exactly what Jesus did. His plans was in that direction, to that place, with that timing, but he just stayed with them. And that's one of those key qualities we're talking about, the making ourselves available. And then he sat at the table with them, and then we know what the great thing that happened. He broke the bread, and then they recognized him. And this is such a strong passage on the supper, isn't it? We recognize Jesus when they're through the supper, through the blood, through the bread, through the wine. I mean, it really comes close to us. Then they recognized him. So that first part of what Jesus did, as we find in this text, is how he really went alongside people, asked, listened, drew them out, changed his plan to make himself available. He was listening with empathy. But he did something more, and you know that so well, I just mention it briefly. Because I jumped over the passage in verse 25. He said to them, how foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. I mean, he just shared the word with them, boldly. And he said, how foolish you are, how slow of heart to believe. And then he opened the scriptures, and that changed their whole perspectives. And they saw things they hadn't seen earlier. and you know from this passage that that led to what they describes as burning hearts. They say that just afterwards. Or hearts are burning, they say in verse 32. And later in that same chapter, in verse 45, some other disciples say, then he opened their minds so that they could understand the scriptures. And I like that combination of verse 32 and 45. 32, the burning hearts, how the scriptures can do something with our hearts to make them burning. But at the same time, in verse 45, he opened their minds so that they could understand. Heart, emotions, all that's within us. But then at the same time, mind, intellect, perspectives. And Jesus helped them into this new reality of understanding through the scriptures. So I just wanted to use this passage, and much more could be said, but I think this kind of outlines those two key qualities. As you all said, it's something of being there, listening, going alongside, making ourselves available, showing love, but at the same time, using the word in a bold way. And there are ditches on each side, as we say in Norway. We can fall in any of the two ditches. We can be so listening, empathic, mirroring, listening, whatever, ever. There's no end to it. but people need some new perspectives, some burning hearts, and some enlightened minds. But we can also end up in the other ditch, being so strong with a word that we just push people away because they don't sense we are there with them and for them and loving them. And I think, at least in our culture, that is... So should you pray something for us in Europe, pray this Luke 24, to be these kind of people, with those two qualities combined. We would just like, are there any just immediate reactions to this? We want to make this as back and forth as possible. So are there any ideas that popped up in you when you saw this passage in Luke 24? So please share it.
It strikes me, you know, how sad and weary they were because they were going back to their home and they were down. And this is the kind of people that we encounter.
Yep.
People who are down. And when they heard the word and when they saw Jesus, the energy of faith that came back to them, they kept rushing back to be with the other disciples and tell them. You know, they were excited.
Yeah.
And I think that's, for me, is the energy of faith that once we get our eyes on the Lord.
Yeah, good. Thank you.
I think the thing that struck me was this verse you picked, the 25. The Lord is, you know, that's pretty strong wording, you foolish ones, huh?
Yeah.
But, you know, I look at it and say, he says, really, it's what we were talking about this morning, people are afraid to believe the word.
Yeah. Yeah.
Afraid to trust God.
And I also do think that it was easier for them to take it that way because Jesus has already showed them much love, walking with them, listening to them, being with them. And it makes it so much more possible to receive the tougher things when you have that kind of people around you with that kind of a friendliness and listening ear. I think that's... And people can take a lot when they are in an atmosphere of sense of being loved. Yeah? Well, Kari?
We have chosen to say something about three attitudes of an alongsider, and I'm going to say something about point one. I have a friend on the west coast of Norway. Her name is Aud. And 8 years ago, she and her family came to our summer conference, and we got to know each other. Now I meet her fairly regularly. And we talk about many, many things. We talk about her husband, who is not a Christian, and how hard it is to teach her children about Christ when he is not behind her. We talk about her job, friends, and her longing to share Christ with them. She's a very active girl, has many things on her heart. How can I, as an alongsider, help her? Encourage her. I can listen, yes. Maybe I can suggest things, but I have no answers for her. I think what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 11:1 is important here. Follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. I want to point her to Christ because he knows the answers for her. And I want her heart to be enthusiastic from him. Interestingly, Aud says that our time in the Bible, meditating on Jesus, is what helps her the most, makes her heart burn, and helps her love her husband as he is, encourages her to share Christ with her friends. The heart of a longsider is a heart for God. Hosea 6:3 was a verse which struck me very early when I met the Navigators. And in the Norwegian Bible, it comes out like this. Let us eagerly seek to know the Lord. Let us do it eagerly with our full strength. And I made a decision to make this a life verse. The disciples on the way to Emmaus, they knew a lot. They had been with Jesus. They had seen him, eaten with him. They had seen him suffer, crucified, and now they have heard the rumors. They knew a lot, but they understood nothing. They were confused. Not until he opened their eyes, their minds, their hearts to the scriptures. It is said that the longest way is from the head to the heart. We can know a lot, but burning hearts is something different. Jesus has to give us that. When did you last experience your heart burning for Jesus? A sense of closeness, that he is here? We are different, I think, as people. We have different experiences. A friend of mine says that when I sing praise songs, I feel Jesus is so close to me. When we sing music, others say when I'm out in the nature and see all the beauty, I can sense God's presence. Others say when I study the Bible, when I'm there for a long time in the Bible, it's like Jesus jumps out of the pages. I want to share an experience of mine, what has helped me most over the last 10 years on this topic, to make my heart burn. It started 10 years ago when I was busy with children at home and thought I had no time for Bible studies. I guess I had, but I didn't give it priority because I found it hard. So I decided I needed help. I needed some friends to open the Bible with me. And I invited some other women to come to my house once a month and for 2 hours. And this group is still going. But we are not a fixed group. I never know how many come. But I pass out the date early in the semester and I put up a note in church. And whoever likes can come. It varies from 3 persons to 15. And recently, many young mothers have come, which is very encouraging. Before they come, I always pick out a passage from the Gospels where Jesus meets a person or several people. And we start the group by reading this passage spread out in the house if we are many, or spread out in the living room if we are fewer. We turn the back towards each other, and we are there with our Bibles in the laps, alone with Jesus. The first time, one of my friends said, Cardi, 30 minutes, that's far too much. I read this passage in 1 minute, except I know it from a long time ago. And now, 13 minutes is not enough. She always places herself in the kitchen, and she draws the text, and she gets so many ideas out of the texts she has known for a long, long time. And this summer, a new lady came and she said, I don't know if this is the place for me because I'm not so Christian. And but she would try. And she found a chair out in the garden. It was a lovely day. And after 30 minutes, she came in and her face was changed. So what do? We read the scriptures. Often we close the book and we sit there and try to imagine what was it like to be there with Jesus. If I was a person there, I was a fly on the wall, what would I have seen? What was Jesus like? What was his eyes like? His hands? What was the atmosphere? What about the voice of Jesus? What was the tone of his voice? What would he have said to me if he had caught my eyes? And we try to use our imagination and think that we are there. We are there with him. Because he is with us all the time. And we try to imagine his presence. And to me, this has done something different than Bible studies. I think it has helped to come from knowledge more down to my heart. Not just intellectual, but in my feelings in a way. But Jesus is my friend. He really loves me. And he wants to be close to me. After 30 minutes, we gather around the table and we share our thoughts. Not everybody share, but it's a freedom to share. Blessings, thoughts, questions, prayer topics. And later on, some pray if they like. It's very much freedom. And afterwards, we open our lunch packs. Because I don't prepare lunch. I don't know how many comes. So they come there with the lunch packs and I make tea and coffee and we talk. After 2 hours, they are out. And before we started this group, I told the women exactly what it was, because my experience is that when women meet, we talk. And there is no end to how much women talk. So if we don't start with the Bible, my experience is that it's hard to get there. So I say, with this, if this is to meditate on Jesus from the Bible, and if somebody has something to, some difficult things they struggle with, we can always talk afterwards or make an appointment. So this is a very strict setup in a way. To me, it has been a heartwarming experience. I really feel that these women helped me to concentrate and to sit still for 30 minutes. And it also is a model which I can do when I meet women individually. We can sit separately, let God speak to us, and then talk. In Proverbs 4:23, it says, "Above all, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life."
Thank you. And you know, this group of women, and I know a few of them that come together, those are also struggling insiders in their environments, in their families, in their neighborhoods. So I think the we say in Norwegian, the rings are spreading in the water. Do you use that expression here? Drips. Yeah, exactly. So the first thing about the insider, that heart for God, how an insider need that heart for God to be able to communicate Christ, but then we as longsiders, whatever we can do to deepen our relationship with God in our hearts, that will equip us for that. I have two other things I will mention briefly, and then we will have more time to talk. You know those two things very well. The second one is a heart for the lost. And we all know Luke 15. But it's amazing. What is the background for these three great stories? The lost sheep, the lost coin, and the lost son. The background of that was that the establishment, the Pharisees, they didn't like the kind of friends Jesus had. When they saw that Jesus had friends that were sinners, and that he even ate with them, it says in Luke 15:2, they muttered. We don't use that word, but they didn't like it, surely. if he was the Son of God, is that the kind of company to have? That was what really engaged Jesus in this interaction. And then he told these three stories about the lost sheep, the lost coin, one out of 100 sheep, one out of 10 coins, and one out of 2 sons. And the conclusion is the same in all the three stories. I tell you that in verse 7, I tell you that in the same way there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. And I mean, it's a sharp picture, isn't it? You have 100 sheep out there, all of them are in danger, all of them can get lost, and then one of them just sneaks away. And Jesus says, well, we let those 99 be there, and we go for the 100. And I think, at least in our culture, when we're struggling, it takes so much time to see a person come to know Christ. If this isn't the focus, we will give up. And I think that applies to all of us. That priority, that value of Jesus that says it is more important with that one lost sheep, with that one lost coin, with that one lost son, for them to be found to come back again, than to just hedge around those who are there. Of course, this is a double thing, because we know how he is hedging around us and loving those of us who are inside, the 99, the 9 and the 1. But I think when we, as alongsiders, want to encourage insiders, this is one of the key attitudes we must pray about and talk about. Otherwise, we easily end up being activity-oriented Christians that I know a lot of. There are so many good things to be involved in. There are so many good programs. And if we have one, you have probably 35 or something. You have it all. There are so many good things to be involved in. But to be able to relate to those persons who don't come to the church, who don't come to anything, to be able to have the guts and to be in there and keep that as a priority, to be insiders in there, we need alongsiders to encourage us to do that. A heart for the lost. I don't think I will elaborate more on that, except for one thing. And that is that this attitude is hard to teach, but it's really caught. You know, when you are with people that have this kind of an attitude, you sense it. And when I think back on my upbringing and my time in the Navigators, I think those are the people who have really meant most to me, not those who have had all the nice messages about the lost and their situation, but it's those people who have been there, who have done it, who are in the midst of it. And therefore, I think it is so important for us as alongsiders to be with our friends, with our insiders, in their environments, meet their friends, do things together with them to create that atmosphere that we are in this together. The third thing I would just like to mention that we've already said, that's it's about the heart of a friend. Proverbs 27, I just like to highlight a couple of verses there. But you know, sometimes different translations, that's a risky thing. And here is one of those risky things. Things are being translated differently in different translations. But I will start with verse 9. Here it says something like perfume and incense. Incense bring joy to the heart, and the pleasantness of one's friend brings from his earnest counsel. So that says something about the importance of a friend who bring earnest counsel. But in the Norwegian Bible, it says a little, it comes across a little differently. There it says, the love of a friend is more important than good counsel. And that's why I highlight that verse, even though it doesn't come out exactly the same here. Because all of us need counsel every now and then. I need counsel every day, many times a day. But I think the most important quality of an alongsider in this is that friendship, that love, as we said in different ways. We know that that people love us. I remember when Kari and I had our first assignment. We were fairly newly married. We had got our first child, and we had moved to start our first ministry. And often we felt very much on our own. And when I look back, I have a deep idea that the navigators could have done a better job on following us at that time. We were often had many questions. We were confused. We were sad because we saw no fruit in the ministry, and we were kind of burdened many times. It felt very, very lonely. But then one visitor came to us, and he was not a Norwegian even. And I remember we went down to the train station to receive him. And as he came off the train, he started to walk against us. And just as he approached me, he did like this with his arms. And then he said, "No, you are not alone anymore. We will be with, there were two of them, we will be with you a few days." And I think that combination of the arms that went like this and the word saying, "No, you are not alone anymore." That was exactly what I needed. And I think if Jesus had been standing there in his sandals on the platform, he couldn't have been more real to me than this friend through words and all his body language showed that he was there for us. And I know no other thing that can draw out and inspire insiders and keep them in there as just that someone we know love them, love us. And then the second, that we that is a well-known verse, 17, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. That's a tough side of it, as you also shared here. Not only the warm side to it, but also the tough side to it. I have a good friend. He's a leading capacity in one of the businesses in Norway. We often talk. I known him from before he became a Christian. He's one of those people who really want to live as an insider in his business. He's responsible for about 2,000 people in his business, and that's a lot in Norway. And we meet regularly. And then, I think it's a couple of years ago, I called him and we had certain things we needed to discuss. And when that was over, he said, "Ole Magnus, how are you?" And I said, "Well, that's okay." And then he said, "No, I hear on your voice that it isn't okay." Because he knew me that well. And I wasn't that eager to share some of the things because I wanted to keep it to myself. But then he said, "Well, what is it?" And then he kind of approached me on the phone. So I shared it all. And then he said, "I'm coming to Oslo the next week, so maybe we could meet and have some time together." And I said, "We'd do that." And then I hoped that he would say some warm things, of encouraging things on the phone and really lift me up. But he didn't at that time. He just said, "Ole Magnus, is it a chance that the things you're struggling now is just the result of the way you're living? Are you just reaping now from the busyness you are experiencing just now?" Well, a little tough on me. But it was something to it, what he said. And I need those kind of friends. And we all need that. And I think this passage here in Proverbs 27, it kind of pulls it together, as we've already said. The love, the tenderness, the care, the verbal message and the arms coming out, and at the same time that willingness to be direct, to challenge one another, to go to areas in our lives where we need help to grow. And I think as an alongsider, if you really want to minister and to encourage those people whom we are trying to help, we need both those two qualities. And we see them in Jesus, and wherever we look, we see them. So those are the things we would like to share. And we have about another almost half an hour, and we would like to use this rest of the time. It should end quarter past, so we have more time to interact and to talk. And we would just like now, and I think what we do is that we just take 3 or 4 minutes around the table where we're sitting. And how are we doing on the things we these three attitudes? A heart for God, a heart for the lost, the heart of a friend, to be able to encourage insiders. What are our experiences in this? We just sum a little around the table so all of us can be listened to, and then we take some time in plenary and hear what we have talked about. Is that okay? Talk about it around the table. How are we doing on these three heart attitudes towards people we walk alongside? Amen. There was one group who prayed here, so I just used their amen to to put you to a silence. I would just like to open up if there are anyone here who would like to share some of the things you talked about around the table. That would be good, so that all of us can benefit from it. I heard you talked and had a good time, but if there are things that should come to the rest, please take courage.
One of the things that we were discussing here right at the conclusion, and it was the hardest part of the discussion, was, you know, the Proverbs 27, open rebuke is better than secret love, faithful are the wounds of a friend, kisses of an enemy are deceitful. And we're talking about this one section in here about, you know, the heart of a friend.
Yeah.
And of course, our wives or our husbands. And the hardest person to many times to correct or to be corrected by is our spouse. And those are so we were into that discussion.
Are there anyone here who understands what he's talking about?
I'd sure like to know the answer they came up with.
Well, I mean, the only one that was smiling with David was Richard, and he doesn't have a wife.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Okay. I get the impression when I listen to you that you are so into this thinking and doing. But at the same time, I know that when we open up an issue like this, some of us could be here, sitting here, with that sense of, who is the person who see me? Who is the person who comes alongside me in the business of life? When I'm trying to find my way there as an insider, who's my alongsider? And maybe some of us have them, and it could be good just to have a couple of minutes just to think about them, thank the Lord for them. Or it might be that some of us are being reminded during this day that maybe we need a friend like this, more, or another friend like this. So that's the receiving end of it. And then the other question down here under the summarize, for whom am you an alongsider? Are there anyone, someone at your same age or younger ones, you, as an alongsider, could really encourage and continue to equip to function better as an insider? Because this really is a give-and-take situation. And we all know that it functions best when we are both in a receiving and giving situation, when we somehow move into that generational thinking that Paul is talking about in 2 Timothy 2:2, that we can pass on what we are receiving. I know when Kari tells about Aud on the West Coast, that Kari means so much to, and it's a joy to see how Aud gives this, passes this on to others, both Christians and non-Christians. But I also know how needy Kari is, and how needy I am to have people coming alongside us. So we're in the same boat, all of us. So I think we should just spend a couple of minutes just to reflect on those two last questions, and then I'll close in prayer. The two questions that in the last frame there. Who is my alongsider, and for whom am I an alongsider, or could I make an initiative there? Let's just close in prayer. Jesus, we thank you for the description that is given here in Luke 24, how you come along alongside your struggling and confused friends. And you know, at times, that's the story of us. That's how we think and feel about life. And we are living in a world and in a society and in a church where at times all of us have our questions and our struggles. And Jesus, we just pray that this picture of you that we see in this chapter will inspire us to be these kind of people in this needy, broken society, of being people coming along, but at the same time being able to use and share your word in an edifying and uplifting way. And I'd just like to pray for each one in this room. Thank you for the way you have led each one of us. Thank you for the people we thought about some time ago earlier, people who have helped us, influenced us, encouraged us, challenged us. And we just pray for these dear people that you bless them, that you encourage them, that you give them deep meaning back to because of what they have been meaning to us. And now it is our turn, and we just pray that you help us to be these kind of alongsiders in our environment. We pray for that you fill each one of us with your spirit and lead us in this. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, thank you. I'd just like to end by saying that 1 year ago, three of us in the Navigators, we wrote the book on this along the same road. It's not in English, but we're using it a lot in Norway. So could you just, as you think of Norway and our ministry, just pray for that. It's about discipleship and how to the one-on-one ministry. So pray that the Lord will continue to use that. Thank you.